Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Smashy Business Show. I am Warid Ahmed.
And I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And it's Thursday today, November 14th. And the topics that we have today are very interesting.
Yeah, a lot of funny things happening. There's a Department of Government Efficiency now in the US, which will be launched. We don't know how it will work. There's no details. But apparently, when you see Elon Musk, the owner of X, ranting about it on his Twitter, he's just reposting anything and everything regarding it, and he is giving his opinion on what the department will do. The main idea is to remove bureaucratic processes, try to cut down the budget for government offices, try to cut down the time of processes. But our AI minister, UAE's Minister of AI and Digital Economy, Umar Al-Ulama, he tweeted a very nice thing. He congratulated Musk and Ramaswamy. Both have been placed by Trump in this role. And he said that, yes, good idea. But we've already done that in the UAE.
Yeah.
We have a zero bureaucracy program, which was launched last year. And we're already doing it. We're trying to remove 2,000 procedures and steps from the whole government procedures. So just to give you an example, if you're going for visa, Emirates ID, all these things, they all are government procedures, right? So they're trying to reduce the number of steps so there's less money involved, less manpower involved.
Using tech and AI.
Yeah, so it was a flaunt, to be honest. I loved that how he flaunted that. We've already done it. The world's biggest economy, US, they've just now thought of it. Thanks to Elon Musk's backing of the whole Trump campaign, giving 75.
We now know why he was endorsing it.
Yeah, he wanted a consultancy role in the government because according to a lot of reports and a lot of stuff that has been written after Trump won the election and is now the president-elect, he will soon become the president. So since that time, there's been so many articles on why Trump won the election more than, Musk won the election more than Trump. Tesla's shares went up. SpaceX is supposed to reportedly by a lot of big organizations, not by us, not by me, Bloomberg, Al Jazeera, the main ones that I read every day. Everyone is saying that SpaceX will now get contracts from NASA and all of that. So everything that comes under Musk now, he has that kind of power which will benefit him.
It will benefit him, but will it benefit the world?
Yeah, obviously, his idea is that if they make the government more clear, more transparent.
But he's self-serving. He's very self-serving.
He is, but
it is not for the people, it's for him. Because think about it, now has a role in the government, that's going to be... It's going to be easier for him to obtain any licenses that he needs, any land that he needs for any of his operations. You know what's so interesting, Majid? The EU rule of law chief actually called Elon Musk a promoter of evil. She said that unlike other tech bosses, he is not able to recognize good and evil. And that by him being able to buy X, which was before that Twitter, we started to relativize evil, and he's helping it proactively. He's the promoter of evil.
So you think he's evil?
I think there is a sense of truth in it. Because think about it already like this. Elon Musk in himself, he already has enough power. He already has enough power. He has everything that he needs. Why does he need more? Especially a role in the government.
It's the basic hedonistic need of a human being. The first is like food, water, all of these. Then you go up, you need money and comfort and lifestyle. Then you go up, you get all of the money and everything. Then you want power, obviously. You need, you desire for power.
Exactly.
In decision making. And then when you're at that point, like CEO of a global something, then you desire power to rule over people. So it's a very nice staircase, I would say, that you climb as you go through this hierarchy of needs or something. But it's a very like famous hedonistic need.
Imagine
that you
he's
need
looking
power.
Right at me.
He's looking right at me.
Yeah, continue.
Yeah,
sorry.
So but all of this stuff, he now has the power. To be honest, what I think throughout the campaign for Trump, his idea was to get into a position of power where now he dictates government policy. Because Department of Government Efficiency, it's very clear. All the government departments will answer or will be questioned by this department. And so it has a very nice touch to it, DOGE. That's also a cryptocurrency, DOGE coin, doggy coin. And it's a Shiba Inu dog, which became famous for its faces. And they converted into a cryptocurrency. Elon Musk is a very good, like very known to be a very good backer of that cryptocurrency. So yeah, everything is so much connected. The main idea is that Musk supported Trump to win the election because he wanted this consulting role. So yeah, that's a good thing. And to be honest, if you I've read Elon Musk's biography, I forgot the author, sorry, but that guy has been very close to Musk. He's done multiple interviews with him, and then he wrote Musk's biography. And I remember reading the part about him removing all the walls in the offices, always open offices. He would sit in the corner without any walls or anything. So he believes in openness. The idea of Trump, the idea of Musk, of no meetings. If you need a meeting, that means there's something wrong. Just don't get a meeting. Just get the work done. So he has a very
niche way of thinking.
Not niche. He has a very Musk way of thinking, because with all these big
ideology.
Guys, yeah. You look at Jeff Bezos. He has his own clear idea, a very specific ethos of work that he has. Then Bill Gates. You name any person. Everyone has their own unique style. So Musk's style is like removing all the barriers, just getting the work done.
Look, I think he's very smart and he's very admirable. That's for sure. His skills, they're insane. However, I don't believe that people with this much intelligence should obtain that much power.
So you believe in the superhero movie where the smart guy will become the villain, right?
The good guys
are also superheroes.
Look, I really don't think that somebody with this much, especially somebody who almost controls the AI sector and has revolutionized it, I find that to be very dangerous. But you know what's so interesting? When you take a look at Elon Musk's like family life in general, it's interesting because like his father just very recently, he spoke like very highly of him. He said that he's very smart, but he does think that he has a hidden agenda behind endorsing Trump. But what's interesting is Musk called his dad a terrible human being. I just find it all so interesting.
It's just the family thing that goes on. To be honest with us guys, we grew up hating our dads sometimes because obviously your dad gives you a realistic version of the world. They want you to be strong and like never think that someone will give just anything to you. Especially talking about Desi dads, like the dads of India and Pakistan. We have this very cultural notion that the dad has to be strict and the mother is the loving person in the house. Dad will always be like, you have to go out, you have to learn the ways of the world, because if you don't, you won't survive in the world. So they teach you to be street smart and very firm, and they teach you that part of life. And moms teach you the loving part, the caring part, the kindness part of that, right? So I guess to an extent, his quote is related to that. But overall, the idea that Trump supported, Musk supported Trump, I don't think he is evil. I believe if you want someone to be in a place of power, better it be a very, very smart man, because he will use his smart and obviously for his purposes. Obviously, self is one part of self, but he eventually will also make things better because he knows that how, and especially with Musk, he knows how to get the work done. Referring to NVIDIA CEO, I remember, he was talking about a data center that NVIDIA built with Musk for xAI. And he was like, it's a whole 6-month process to get the land and then to put in the infrastructure, bring in all the people. So the whole construction and everything, like from 0 to 100, A to Z, takes 6 months. And he's like, that's the best time. Otherwise, it takes like 2-3 years. He said, with Musk, we built it in 19 days. 6 months is the best time. 2-3 years is the normal time. He built that data center in 19 days. So coming from the NVIDIA CEO, who is like the one of the richest people and very close on the list with Musk, one guy praising the other guy so much, that means he is up in that billionaire's ladder and in the like top richest. He's the top rich person on the planet right now. So all this shows that everyone is praising Musk not for what he has, but what he has to offer as well. And that the main thing about Musk that any CEO I've seen talking about is that he removes all the extra procedures and he just wants to get the things done. So coming back to the UAE.
Even if you take a look at his origin, Musk, he's from South Africa. And up until he was 17 years old, he was raised in apartheid South Africa.
Yeah.
So I wonder if the shadow of apartheid and, the thoughts that trailed it, I wonder if it trails Musk. Does that make sense?
Not to me, to be honest. Obviously, you can have your opinion, but I just think he's a guy who loves power, loves the money that he has, loves the control that he can put on people. And that's it. He's just a normal human being. Obviously, intellectually, IQ-wise, maybe, EQ-wise, maybe, he's better than a lot of us. Mm. And that is why he's such a big businessman, because you need a lot of that when you're doing businesses. And he doesn't have one business. He's doing so many things at the same time. And simultaneously, tweeting every hour. That's like I can't even tweet every hour. Even though I work on social media, I can't even tweet every hour. So he has a very compartmentalized system of work where he knows what time to put in what, how much time to put in what. And he's running so many things simultaneously. So that shows he's a genius, to be honest. In the conventional terms, he is a genius. Again, coming back to the evil part, I don't think he's evil. He's just smart. And I believe a smart person in a good power position is always good. Maybe for him, okay, let's say 90% good for him, but there is like 10% good for other people. The space rocket that they caught back, no one in the world has ever tried that. He did it in the very first attempt. They caught the rocket booster. That will make going to the moon, going to Mars easier, cheaper. So maybe you and me in the next 15, 20 years, maybe we'll have a visit to the moon. So he is doing something for humanity. The dystopian idea that you always talk about, dystopian-wise, a lot of people say that, oh, he's trying to end life here and he just wants everyone to move to Mars. No, he's exploring. And that's the sign of a good person who doesn't know any boundaries.
A good person is a stretch.
Yeah, he's just a person who is trying to establish a boundary, and then he's like, okay, I'll cross this boundary. Let's see what's on the other side. So that kind of person, okay, sometimes, like according to his quote, there is a chance AI may go bad 10 to 12%. Likewise, there is a chance Elon Musk may go bad 10 to 12%. But right now, what we've seen, I think it's a good move. And our UAE AI minister, the first ever in the history, UAE was the very first country in the world to appoint a minister for AI, one, and the guy was Umar Al-Ulama. I was just reading a Time magazine op-ed by him, and he said that when I was appointed in 2017, soon after, like 1 month after that, I was in a bilateral talks meeting. He didn't mention the country's minister, but he was like, he was a very senior minister, and he came to me and said that, oh, they're appointing a kid who is the age of my son to run a hypothetical technology. It shows that the UAE government has a lot of time and money and they're just doing it. Mm-hmm. And then he continues the whole op-ed saying that now those people are like, their governments and their systems are now working towards AI. Mm-hmm. So UAE, according to him, is like 10 years beyond the world, like 10 years forward to the world. Everyone was talking about just AI. UAE already started establishing data centers here. Mm. That, oh, for AI, you will need data centers. And Saudi Arabia is following suit. There's data centers in Saudi Arabia. So yeah, UAE, I think the greatest thing about UAE, as in the article also, the op-ed by him for Time magazine, that even if they see a hint of the future, that, oh, this may happen, they just start building something around it.
Yeah, and right now, by the way, I definitely predict that in the future, when history is written, the UAE will be a very big part of the AI race. They definitely will be.
So the contemporary history of the world, like every 50 or 100 years, you see the history of the world. And UAE, especially Saudi Arabia now with their Vision 2030, in the last decade or so, UAE has been doing great since like 15, 20 years. Mm. Whatever industry you see in the world, they were exceptional at it. when AI and all these new technologies coming in, they're great at it. But Saudi Arabia has caught up. That's the good part. Yeah. So, yeah, if you make a Venn diagram, UAE will be this big. Saudi Arabia will be near them because they've started doing so much so quickly. And thankfully, to be honest, the blueprint is provided by UAE. Not downplaying Saudi Arabia's contribution, not downplaying their involvement in it, or like 99% of the work. But to be honest, UAE provided the blueprint because they were the first ones to implement anything and everything possible. You wouldn't ever think about building the tallest building in the desert. Mm. It's impossible. The sand here is not good for the area. The land is not good for a stable such big building. They did it. They made anything. Museum of Future is like the example.
You know, I'm going there today. Yeah. I'm excited.
So making that building itself is an idea which no one thought of. And they made a building, such beautiful calligraphy. The inside is so beautiful. So UAE is like 10 years in front of the world right now. And I think they will do great.
For sure. And for our next topic today, it is about Landmark Group. Landmark Group, they own multiple subsidiaries. Yeah. For example, Home Center, Baby Shop, Splash, Lifestyle, Viva. And what they're basically doing is that they're planning a $1 billion investment into the Gulf in India. So in, I believe, 2026, they're going to open their first Viva store in Saudi Arabia. Yeah. And what makes Viva really special is that Viva, they offer very affordable groceries. Yeah. So they offer a bunch of groceries at very discounted prices. Right now, there's a bunch of Viva stores that are opened in the UAE.
Yeah, yeah.
I have seen many, like in every single road, you see them. Now, if we speak, now what makes Landmark so special is that, you know, their story, especially in this region, its impact is so far-reaching.
Yeah.
They opened their first store in Qatar in the 1970s, and they are now headquartered in the UAE. And their story in itself, what makes this company beautiful is that all of the subsidiary companies that they have, they're all affordable, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, I've shopped at Home Center, Splash, Baby Shop, and they provide everything that a person could possibly need, but in such affordable prices.
Yeah.
And even though they're providing such affordable prices, the company is still doing really good profit-wise. And even what's even more interesting to me, I was telling Majid, it's just the story of like their owners. Previously, it was owned by...
Mickey Jagtiani started it. The very first store, he started a baby product store in Bahrain. And then he died. So Renuka Jagtiani, zero retail experience. That's the good story. That's like the interesting part, that she has zero retail experience, zero like running a business experience. And now today, Landmark did $7 billion in revenue last year. And out of that, they're trying to get $1 billion into more expansion. So the story itself is very inspiring.
Yeah,
Renuka's story. Then Mickey Jagtiani's story, obviously, he was the founder. He laid the foundation, and his wife built on that foundation an empire. And the most important thing whenever I read about these groups is, when I came to the UAE, it was a very interesting idea for me that you look at brands. You always talk about brands. For example, if I'm shopping, if I want like these button-down shirts, casual or like semi-casual or semi-formals, I would opt for Centerpoint, Max, R&B. These two, three brands are always there where you get good quality, good prices. There's always a sale going on, summer sale, winter sale.
And it's, I think with Landmark Group, what is so beautiful about the company is that they cater to minorities.
Yeah.
Because we're constantly discussing how, you know, there are a lot of billionaires and millionaires who live in the UAE, but that's
There's not always the case
for everybody. And that these stores that Landmark Group has provided and they have built, they've made it easier for people to be able to adapt in this country and still be able to obtain things that rich people have, but at such affordable prices.
Yeah.
And just going back to, you know, the subject of their CEO, Renuka, am I saying her name right? Yeah, so Renuka, after the passing of her husband, she actually took over the reins and became the CEO of Landmark Group. And she is right now one of the richest Indians in the world with $5.6 billion as her net worth, according to Forbes.
Yeah.
Yes, it has gone up. So it's pretty impressive. And she's actually the reason for why Landmark itself actually expanded into India. She's the one who pushed for that expansion and was a very big part of it. But the entire story, it's beautiful because you feel that they hear the people.
Yeah. You know? And also she started Splash, the Anil Landmark Group. There were a lot of brands, but Splash was her baby. She actually started it from scratch, and you have Splash everywhere in the world right now, in Pakistan, in India. Here in the Middle East, you have many
stores. You can find it in Mall of the Emirates.
Yeah, so there's nearly 400 retail stores that they run under different brands. Just going through all of them, and I was like, okay, some of them even I didn't know. I know a lot about Landmark. So Lifestyle Max, Home Center, Homebox, Emax. Then they're into hospitality and leisure business as well. So Oasis Mall, Fitness First, City Max Hotels, Food Mark, Balance, Zafran Indian Bistro, that's a restaurant. So they're not into retail only. Retail is like the biggest business, but they're also in hospitality and leisure. And I remember they have the Shukran program, so I use it a lot. I'll get a lot of money back and then I can buy stuff from it. The main point that I was trying to make is Landmark. Then you talk about Al Shaya, you talk about Apparel Group. There's a lot of groups that are here, and you never know them unless you do a deep dive. Mm. Once, I remember I bought Starbucks. I don't usually drink it. Actually, my wife bought it. I was just looking at the receipt. And I saw that it didn't say Starbucks down the bottom. It started with Starbucks, blah, blah, but under it said Apparel Group. Mm. And I was like, Al Shaya. And I was like, what is happening here? What is Al Shaya? And then I went down the rabbit hole and I found out that it's not just one brand which is being run as a brand. There's a whole company, a group there, and they run all the brands. So some of them are their own brands, some of them are the franchises that they buy from other countries. So it's a very nice concept here in UAE to build like a house where you have different brands, local brands, own brands, franchised brands. So yeah, UAE is actually, these guys, to be honest, they came at a time when UAE was thriving.
Exactly.
And that is the opportunity that they took, and they
the
took a risk, to be honest.
The competition was not that high at that time.
It wasn't a competition, but there was a lot of risk involved. These guys invested in the UAE. Like, they said, okay, this country, we believe in it. We believe the idea or the vision that the rulers of this country have, and we want to grow here, so we'll support it. So a lot of investment came into that thing. So it's not just like they just came out of nowhere and became millionaires and billionaires. They invested their time, energy, money. Actually, they were very young when they came here. So they actually spent a lot of their youth building these brands. And eventually, with the growth of UAE, they grew. So today, if you look at them and be like, oh, they're such big groups, only because they came at a good time. No, they came at a good time, but it was a very risk-based investment that they did in at that
time. And you know what's so inspiring about their late CEO Mickey is that Mickey, before he moved to the Gulf and he founded the Landmark Group, he was a taxi driver. Yeah. He was a taxi driver and he was cleaning up hotel rooms to make ends meet. And I believe he also dropped out. So it's just to see that, you know, they became billionaires from that. That's so inspiring. Yeah. That's so inspiring, especially, I believe, for the Indian community in the UAE. We have such a large Indian community. So to have such amazing role models, I think it's really inspiring. Like, how do you feel about that, Majid?
The main thing I feel when I look at them, the inspiration that I take from, is that a lot of them didn't come from money. The same like taxi drivers. But again, they invested at a time where they saw an opportunity. It's like, I'll give you a very weird and simple example. I think it's weird because a lot of people don't invest in crypto. In January this year, it was about 38,000. Right now, it's above 90,000. So if someone took a risk, but this is a very short-term risk and it has a very bad downfall, it can go to zero at any point in time. No one knows when or why, but it's growing. Likewise, for them, it was a 10-year, 12-year plan. You look at any person, the Gems guy, we did a Dreamers episode about him. He worked here. He sold fruits on the Indian streets. But their parents came. They were both teachers. They were teaching in the UAE at that point. So they had a lot of expat kids who didn't understand Arabic. So they started teaching English and then set up a small school. And then he came back from India and then he was like, okay, I can build something on it. So a lot of people, they literally started from zero. So it's like, it's not a bad thing that if you're at zero, there is always an opportunity for you to grow. Just find something that you love, maybe, or that you think you can grow.
And especially in this region, Majid, where I feel that we really see how Indians and just South Asians in general have expanded their sphere of influence. Because even when I think about it, a lot of my favorite brands, by the way, are founded by Indian businessmen. Yeah. Like, for example, you know that I'm pretty sure they have other ice cream brands too. I mean, other brands in general. But Quality, I love Quality ice cream. And I believe it was founded by this... businessman from Kerala, but he passed away recently. But it just goes to show you how a lot of these brands, they're, you know, a lot of the brands in the UAE, they're founded by Indian people. Yeah. Like their influence in the country, it's great. It's really great.
At the time when UAE was founding, like Pakistanis, to be honest, were in majority, they were like 30-35%. But Indians were there also. It was around 15-18% Indians, and then obviously they saw an opportunity, they invested. Pakistanis, I don't know why they came down the numbers. Now there's less Pakistanis, more Indians. But I love the community system that they have. They, wherever they go, they build a community.
Exactly, they do.
And the community system eventually then leads to big businesses. Lulu is a very big example. That guy loves his community. He gave jobs to so many people in Dubai, brought them here, gave them jobs. Grew his own group, obviously, but then he also contributed to his community and grew the community.
Had an IPO did really well.
These guys, they don't just come and become billionaires. They also come, bring their community and make them not millionaires, but at least they make them good enough to sustain themselves in a very nice way, have a good quality of life, all
for
that.
Sure.
So not only, there's like millions of lessons in all these founders' stories that they started with zero and now they're here today, something big. They support their communities. They don't grow alone. They grow with the community.
Sure.
So yeah, great people to like go into detail and learn about. So yeah, Landmark is one of those groups.
Yeah, and finally, for our last topic today, Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid launches 2 billion dirhams Dubai police projects to enhance security and community well-being.
Nice.
Honestly, when I take a look at this, Majid, especially as a woman, I feel so happy to hear this. No, really, because safety is so important. You know, last night, I, what's it called? So our house, I live very close to my aunt's house, and I actually visited her after work. But what ended up happening is, like, every single person with a car went out. So nobody could come take me home. So I walked home, okay?
Oh, nice.
So I'm on my very long 30-minute walk at 9 p.m., mind you. I was a bit nervous. I was slightly nervous. I was like, ooh, it's late. I know it's Dubai. It's very safe. So I'm walking, okay? And I feel somebody running from behind me. I'm like, that's it. That's it. They're going to get me. Like, this is going to be my day. Do you know what I mean? And imagine, it was just a man jogging.
Yeah.
And I remember he just kept running. And he was like, sorry. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, you know what? It is safe. It is safe. But just like in general, it could always be more safe. It could always be more safe. And this program over here, yes, they're investing 2 billion dirhams, but it's actually divided into different projects. So what they're doing is that they're going to open more training centers. They're also going to improve the analysis of like crime prevention.
Yeah.
So they're really going to work on that. And I think that's something that's really important. And they're also going to look at how they can improve like well-being in general.
It involves
like
a lot of housing projects for the Dubai police people as well. There's a floating smart police station project, a part of it. It's a world first. It's always a world first with them. They always try to do something unique. So a world first facility located offshore at the World Islands. This 24 station will serve yacht enthusiasts and water sports lovers, operating with no human intervention. So there's a floating smart police station that is going to be there, which is a part of this money. Then the Bar Dubai police station is going for an expansion. So nearly 90 million will be used for that. There's a forensics medicine building that they're building. General Department of Protective Security and Emergency building is being built in Al Ruwaya. There'll be housing, Daman, they're building housing. There's the Area 56 that they're building. It's a crime prevention and data analysis center. It's called Area 56. And there's like 300 million going into that facility. And they'll use AI and predictive policing. So that's a good concept to know if they want to improve safety, security, traffic safety as well. So they're putting in all of this system in Dubai police. That is why, to be honest, right now, it's the safest city in the world.
For sure.
You don't see any crime. And you can just walk around.
And this is going to cement that.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is going to cement that. But, you know, Majid, just in general, the one thing that I truly thank AI and technology for is crime prevention.
Yeah.
Because
but it's to be honest,
it's big. It's big because people now are scared. There's cameras.
Yeah.
There's you know your footprint, everything. Your what's it called? What is it called when you like scan your
thumbs?
Yes. Yeah. They biometric all your information. Scanning. All your information is taken, and I love that because it's easier to catch people on things.
I remember recently there were riots in London and UK, I guess, a lot of racial riots and all of this happening. Mm. And one of the founders of startup, he started it in UK, but he moved like 10 years ago to Dubai. And he wrote on LinkedIn, he gave a very good example, the thing that you're talking about, biometrics and everything, that UAE has a very nice centralized system with the Emirates ID. Your Emirates ID is literally everything. Mm. Now you have banks and ATMs where you can use just your Emirates ID to take out cash. Mm. And they're moving it to thumbprints now. It's already been done. It's a lot of ATMs. You can just go there, put your thumb and it'll know that it's you and give you money. So, and they're going to facial recognition now. Mm. Just go show your face to the ATM, take the money and go.
They're
doing all of this stuff. The good thing is, sorry, I forgot what I was saying. I went to another tangent.
Take your time.
Yeah, but these things, this shows that they're not stopping at something. They're constantly building on every technological aspect that they can find. So that's, again, it's a very good thing that should be appreciated.
Of course, it should be. But it needs to be implemented in the right way. A few days ago, did you see the case of all those people who were stranded outside this marina building?
Oh, yeah.
So when the building basically installed, a building in marina, they installed a thumbprint.
Yeah.
And
but they didn't give a prior notice.
Yeah,
and
they didn't give a prior notice. And a bunch of people from the building were stuck outside until like 1 a.m.
But again, the good thing, the Dubai police intervened. Everyone intervened and the problem was solved eventually. Yeah. So it's always like people have the option of just going on the Dubai police app. Mm. They have an app also. You can just go there and they'll be there in 5 minutes. Mm. You would never see that. That's the funny thing about the Dubai police. You will never see them on the road. Sometimes at maybe some very busy intersection, you'll see a police car. But really, do you see them stopping people?
They are very supportive. Yeah. They are truly so,
and
so supportive.
You call them and they'll be there in 2 to 3 minutes. And you'll be like, where were you? We couldn't find you on the road. So that's a very good thing about Dubai police. You never know where they are. But they are there to protect you, to help you. Anything happens to your car, they'll come. Every day we see stories on our sister brand, Love in Dubai. Some guy's cruise control in the car gave up. They helped him slow down, cleared the road for him. So they're just everywhere. We saw in the rains as well. They took their cars out deep into the water to help people. They were like, we don't care about the car, we care about the people.
I'm pretty sure they're also stationed in other countries, by the way.
No, that I don't know.
I remember, I just forgot which location it was. But when I saw it, I was like, why would the Dubai police be there?
I remember there's an event that happens at the World Trade Center every year. It's the International Police Conference or something, and Dubai hosts it. And the police from around the world comes there. FBI comes there, CIA comes there.
Wow.
Like, those are the most famous names that can be relevant to you. Everyone comes there, and there Dubai police is hosting them, and it's a great event. I was like at World Trade Center for an event, and I saw that. I was like, it's so nice that they are hosting everyone in the world for this conference. And the way they carry themselves, Dubai police is like one of the police which you don't get scared of. There's obviously a fear that, oh, maybe I shouldn't do something wrong. This should be there, obviously. But the way they treat you, the way they talk to you.
I remember
was in Nahda area and I was walking around with my son. He was just playing on the side. Yeah, and there was a Sharjah police car there. And I was in Dubai. I was surprised by it, but maybe they came for the tea and something. And my son was playing around and just the policeman randomly came out of the car, greeted him, asked his name, started playing with him. And I was like, how can you be so nice as a policeman? Apparently, you're supposed to be scared of police, so you follow the rules, right? Mm. But here, people actually love them because they're so nice, they're so supportive and everything. Even if you sometimes make a mistake, which is minor, and you're not causing any harm, they will tell you, it's okay, but don't do this.
Yeah.
But the next time they will catch you.
Yeah.
So it's important to follow the rules. Very important.
I agree with you. And, you know, like Majid, for example, with my family, we've gotten into a few parking situations. But, no, it's because, see, I have an older brother, Majid, and he has autism. So because of that, there are just, you know, there are certain cases where, you know, my parents need to go very quickly.
Yeah.
And the Dubai police has truly been so helpful. They're so supportive of people with determination. Yeah. Like, truly. Like, I remember when I was a kid a long time ago. Majid, you moved here 2 years ago, right? Okay. Well, years ago, every National Day, the celebrations were insane.
And it's coming.
Now, by the way, it's coming up. But now it's changed. Now it's, like, more calm. It's more peaceful. Yeah. But, like, 5 years ago, the chaos on National Day, streets would be closed. There would just be, like, there would be so many people on the streets. Yeah. Like, they'd be spraying stuff. It was so fun. It was amazing. And every year, our mom would take us out on National Day. Because we loved it. We loved the chaos. But they stopped
and also
now.
Also the celebration, right?
Yeah, the celebration. It was amazing. And I remember what would happen is, they would have to close a lot of roads.
Yeah.
And what would, because of the fact that, you know, my brother, he's of determination, the Dubai police, they'd actually let us go through.
Oh.
Every single time without fail. My mom would be like, hey, like, you know, he can't wait, like, we need to go. They clear the roads for us. And I'd be like, amazing, we're going home now.
Yeah. If you think they're very strict, they are.
Of course.
But they know when to give
very empathetic.
Leverage, or they know when. It should be like given, the person should be given a benefit of doubt. So they're very good at that. Thank you very much for joining us. Just quickly ended because the producer is saying we have very less time left. Thank you very much. This is a Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business Production, part of
the Augustus Media Podcast Network.
Sorry, quickly finishing it.
Follow us on X, LinkedIn, Instagram, and we also have a newsletter on Beehive. Thank you. See you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.